Now, with respect to the rule of orderliness, before I go into the definition, all circuits have a version of the rule of orderliness, but they don't call it that. I practiced in the 11th Circuit. I clerked in the 11th Circuit. And the first time I heard about the rule of orderliness, I was like, what have I missed? Because you're not going to find it by looking under that label in other circuits. But all circuits, whether they have a fancy name for it or not, have a version of this rule. And basically, what it's providing, you know, it's well settled. It's a well settled rule in the Fifth Circuit that one panel of our court may not overturn another panel's decision. Absent an intervening change in the law, such as by a statutory amendment or the Supreme Court or en banc court. Indeed, even if a panel's interpretation of the law appears flawed, the rule of orderliness prevents a subsequent panel from declaring it void. In short, you got two panel decisions that conflict, you need to follow the earlier. Now, where some confusion can happen amongst the circuits, because the circuits, they have this basic rule, but they differ as to exactly how they apply it, and where some of that confusion comes in is what constitutes an intervening change in the law. So what comes out is a spectrum. And let's say over here on the left, my left, the Second Circuit actually says that an intervening change in the law can occur such that a later panel no longer has to follow an earlier panel when you have an intervening Supreme Court decision that just casts doubt on the prior panel's decision. Casts doubt. Well, if I was arguing a case, I think I could come up with a good argument as to why a lot of Supreme Court cases cast some doubt on earlier decisions. On the other end of the spectrum, on the right, we have like the 11th Circuit. And their rule of orderliness, so they don't call it that, is pretty strict. They're looking for a Supreme Court decision that has a holding. They're not even looking at the reasoning. They're looking at the holding that actually directly contradicts the holding of a prior panel decision. So there's not a lot of room for arguments there. Fifth Circuit, we're in the middle. It's where there's a Supreme Court decision that either directly or implicitly overrules a prior panel. It's that implicit that definitely leaves room for discussion. And it's a little bit stricter than the Second Circuit's like cast doubt, but it's not so far as with respect to the 11th Circuit. So you could certainly see a Supreme Court decision coming out and it, you know, casts some doubt on a rule that all of the circuits have been on the same page. In the Second Circuit, you're going to probably see the rule changing. There's going to be one outcome. Whereas with respect to like the 5th and the 11th, they're probably going to stick to their prior panel decisions and wait until the Supreme Court speaks more directly. And so you're going to see a difference in outcomes based purely on this stare decisis principle, the rule of orderliness, without there really being any substantive reason as to the differences. Now, the other sort of interesting issue that arises here is with respect to what is going to trigger this rule of orderliness. Well, you have to have a prior panel decision deciding an issue, but how deep do they have to go into that issue? And so I want to look at a series of cases, and I want to start, these are all dealing with the question of an aggravated felony, and looking at the Texas offense of felon in possession of a firearm and determining whether it falls within the federal offense of felon in possession of a firearm. Because if it does, then that Texas offense is going to constitute an aggravated felony, which has some really important, you know, implications in terms of both immigration law and criminal law. So the first case is Nieto Hernandez versus Holder. And on this slide, I have defendant, but this is a removal case. It's not a criminal. So he was the petitioner. Later on, we're dealing with in the criminal world. Looking at this issue about the Texas offense of felon in possession. And in that case, the petitioner actually conceded that Texas's felon and firearm elements were identical to the federal substantive elements in Section 922, which is the federal firearm offense. And the defendant instead really focused in on just this interstate commerce element. that the Texas offense of felony in possession of a firearm was not an aggravated felony because state law did not contain an interstate commerce or jurisdictional element. And the panel rejected the petitioner's argument and held that this Texas offense was an aggravated felony. They never looked at the argument that was conceded. They just focused in on that interstate commerce element. Then we have the second case, Castillo-Rivera. And it goes before a panel. And now we actually have the argument that was conceded in the last case being raised. You know, for the first time, this new argument here, arguing that the Texas felon in possession of a firearm was not an aggravated felony because Texas felon and firearm elements were not identical to the federal substantive elements in Section 922. And the panel renders a decision that's very short, you know, a paragraph. And they say, we already decided this. We decided this before in Nieto Hernandez. The Texas offense is an aggravated felony. And they declined to actually address on the merits the substantive argument that was being made for the first time, no longer being conceded. Well, the court actually decided to hear this en banc in Castillo-Rivera. And a majority of the opinion of the court did not actually decide to delve in to the issue related to the rule of orderliness that was there. Instead, a majority of the court, sitting en banc, decided to actually delve in and reject the arguments on the merits.